This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn.
There were hundreds of people on stage at Woodstock. There were hundreds of thousands in the audience. So there are plenty of stories to tell about this most famous of rock festivals that took place 50 years ago. We heard from two of the people in the audience who both had different journeys to Woodstock and different experiences when they were there. Our guests on Overnights were Lorraine Usner and Madeline Savitt. And we began talking about Woodstock with Lorraine telling me about what she was doing in 1969.
Well, I started the year off by living and working in the Bahamas for the first 6 months. I was working on a U.S. naval base there. It was an adventure for me. I just found out about these jobs. It was not too far from where I lived in Florida. So I went over there for 6 months, and it was an unusual thing for me to do.
Had you just finished school or college?
No, I was 21. So I was just trying to find something new in my life. And so I did the Bahamas for 6 months, and I came back to Florida and went to my second pop festival, and it was Atlanta, Georgia, 4th of July, 1969.
That was just a couple of weeks before Woodstock, and it was seen as the forerunner.
That's right. And I went with my brother and a friend of mine, and we were driving along, and we saw these two guys hitchhiking, and you picked up hitchhikers in those days. It was a lot of fun. So we picked up these two guys, and they said, "Hey, we're from Woodstock, New York, and there's going to be a huge festival, and you should come to it in August." And we're going, yeah. You know, we didn't think twice about it. You know, who thought we'd be going? So spent the summer just hanging around with friends and that sort of thing. I wasn't working. And then stopped at some friend's house one day, and they said, "Hey, we're going to Woodstock. You want to come?" And I said, "Well, I guess so. I don't know. I guess I'm not doing anything else." So we jumped in the car and we drove to Woodstock. So we get to New York, and the radio is going, "Turn around, go back. New York State Thruway is completely blocked. You can't get through. No point in trying." We weren't going to turn back after going from Florida, so we persevered, and it took us about 12 hours to drive about 10 miles. And we finally pull off and parked in a big field with a bunch of other people that had pulled off and parked, and that was our camp.
That was Woodstock.
That was Woodstock.
Madeline, what were you doing in 69?
I had graduated high school when I was 16 and just finished a year at the School of Visual Arts in New York. I always had a very high sense of adventure, so after I finished my year, I was working towards saving money to do whatever the next thing would be. A friend and I were supposed to meet at the Port Authority building. I can't tell you how we found out about Woodstock.
But they ran buses from Port Authority, is that right? And that's how you got to Woodstock?
Yes.
And, but you, if you're living in that area, if you're living in New York City or New York State, you're going to be hearing about it, I suppose.
Yes, yeah.
And so they were running buses every 12 minutes or something from the bus terminal.
If you remember 12 minutes, then that's good.
I read it in a book the other day.
Yes, they were running them, and I left fairly early because we got quite close to the site, but it was still a bit of a walk at the point that the traffic was at a standstill.
Okay.
So, but the big thing was that a friend who had all the camping equipment and supplies was supposed to meet me at the Port Authority building for a particular bus. She never showed, and I said, "Well, what the heck, I'll go anyway."
Okay.
So I hopped on the bus and, you know, got to a point where you had to stop and,
Lorraine, you're 21. It's very different to Madeline, who's 16 at the time. What about your parents? Did they have any reservations, or was that, you know, not an issue?
They didn't know what it was all about, really. I told them I was going to New York with some friends, and I have relatives not too far from there, and I said I was going to stop to see them as well and spend some time with them, and so they were fine.
Madeline, though, you're 16. What did your parents say?
I don't remember what they said before, but I do remember what they said after when they saw me coming home, and they just felt a miracle had happened.
Yeah. Well, you got home okay.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I was quite high-spirited and adventuresome, but also fairly independent. And I just sort of had this idea, and I told them I was going, and that was kind of it. I don't remember what they said. about my going. I don't think they put up a huge objection.
Right. Lorraine had been to rock festivals before, or a couple of them. Had you been to anything remotely like Woodstock?
You know, again, I was living in a suburb of New York, and so what we would do is go to concerts in New York, Fillmore East, right. All that. We were, I guess what they called at the time, teeny boppers. So, you know, whether it was Bizarre Cafe or all those places where you'd see Dylan, you'd see Hendrix, you'd see all those people, and it was... they were there.
Yeah.
Fillmore East, I went to the Who concerts, and it was just part of what we did.
So did you go to Woodstock and Lorraine as well because it was a big festival, or did you want to see any of these particular acts, Lorraine?
I had no plan. My friends just said, you want to go? I had been told about it that short time before, and I had nothing else to do. It was exciting.
Yeah.
It was really exciting to see all those kids, all your peers, just partying and having fun and people talking to each other in the line of cars and all this activity. It got more exciting, and we were not going to turn back.
Okay. And how close did you get before you had to get out and walk?
I'd say we were probably about a half a mile.
Oh, that's not too bad.
No.
Some people walk 20 miles.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long. Yeah. I mean, I'm a walker, so it wasn't terrible. It wasn't awful. I actually had expectations of seeing my friend there. I mean, we really had no idea how big it would be. So I think when I hopped on the bus, I figured, oh, I'll meet her there.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you run into people you knew in that crowd?
I actually did. I actually ran into those two hitchhikers.
Oh, no.
Believe it or not, I did. It was unbelievable. We just looked at each other and they said, see, we told you, we told you. And it was incredible. And I also ran into another guy that I knew. He was the bartender at the local place that my friends and I hung out at. And I was walking down the road with millions of people around and I hear someone calling my name. And I turned around and it was him. So I actually did, out of that sea of people.
Lorraine Usner is our guest, and Madeline Savitt, and they were both at Woodstock. I know a lot of people claim to have been at Woodstock, but these two actually were at Woodstock. So once you got there, what did you do? Did you set up camp? Did you find a place to watch? I mean, the stage was kind of at the bottom of the hill, and it was a very large hill. So what did you do, Madeline?
Yeah, after I kind of scouted it out and saw that it was fairly hopeless, that I was not going to meet up with my friend, in my 16-year-old way, I just walked right down to the stage area. The barrier cordoning off the performer's area was just a low little rope with, you know, stanchions in between.
Right.
So I just stepped over it and I was in the performer's area. And at that point, I just sort of became friendly with some people who were there, who belonged there.
For example?
No, the people that I knew were just sort of production people or media people or whatever. But it was the area where all the performers were wandering around. So again, you'd see Jimi Hendrix or you'd see Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and they were kind of wandering in that area.
Were you starstruck or was this just normal?
I think you're always a little bit starstruck, but again, you know, I'd seen performers before and everything. Mm-hmm. Listen, I think I was probably a 16-year-old curmudgeon even then, because after a while, the physical discomfort started getting so that, you know, I really would like a port-a-john that, you know, is not overused, or, you know, I'm thirsty, I'm hungry. And, No, it was a buzz. I mean, there were so many people, so that it was really quite nice in that way.
Okay. But, and Lorraine?
Camp consisted of the station wagon that we rode up on, and I think one of the guys had a tent. But, you know, I don't remember sleeping. I don't remember eating. I just remember being there and being in the moment, and, you know, it was... there was just so much excitement.
Okay. Madeline walked down to the front of the stage there. What did you do?
Okay,
well,
after we set up our camp, we decided that we're going to go down and take our place at the festival. So we're walking down the street, and these guys had a table set up, and they said, oh, we're selling tickets. You got to have your tickets. So we bought our tickets, and we each bought a ticket, and we proceeded down the road and got to the main area of the festival, but the gate was completely trampled to the ground. Nobody was taking tickets anymore.
You know, they didn't make money out of it for another 10 years or so. So I'm glad your money did contribute.
That's
to
right.
Woodstock.
And these guys were probably they probably printed the tickets themselves, and they probably kept the money themselves, because it didn't look like an official ticket stand. But, you know.
You could buy tickets beforehand by mail, of all things.
Yeah,
did
I had
you
advanced
buy tickets?
Yeah.
And so where are those tickets now? Because I know, Lorraine, you still got them.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Madeline? Maybe tucked away in some family archive somewhere.
So you've still got them. You never handed them at the gate.
No. There was nobody there to do that with.
Okay. Yeah. We're remembering Woodstock, one of the most important rock moments of the 1960s, or indeed of all time. So you settled in, Lorraine, and what happened then?
So we walked down to the area where the stage was and found a place to park ourselves with our blankets. And it was the most beautiful natural amphitheater, filled with beautiful alfalfa grass. It was just completely covered. It was a beautiful amphitheater of grass. So everybody just sat.
It was grass for a while.
On the amphitheater.
Until it
rained.
Where did you sit? Were you halfway up? Were you up at the back?
We were about halfway. Yeah. None of us had the desire to go down to the stage or anything. We were just happy to be in there to hear the music and to be in the vibe at the moment, you know.
And who do you remember seeing first up on that first day?
So Richie Havens was first. I remember him very well because I was a Richie Havens fan.
Okay.
Yeah, he was great. And I don't remember this Swami guy, Satchinananda.
No.
But Country Joe McDonald I remember very well because I was also a fan of his. I still have his albums. I remember John Sebastian and Sweetwater. Now, Sweetwater was a very special band for me because I had seen them before and I absolutely loved them. And then they disappeared off the face of the earth because apparently the lead singer was in a car accident and the band broke up. And nobody ever knew what happened to them. And for years, I looked for their music, couldn't find it. Several years ago when I was in the States, there was a special on TV. It was the story of Sweetwater. And they had this whole, a drama about what happened to them. And I don't know how many people, thousands and thousands of people responded to that show because a lot of people felt the same as I did, that they really loved Sweetwater. So I remember them very well.
You know, what also I want to know about Woodstock is you were halfway back in, you know, 500,000 people, and Madeline, you were up the front. You might have got a better sound. I don't know. But what was the sound like?
The sound
could you hear
was
everything?
Fabulous.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was loud.
You could hear it for miles.
Yeah, it was good.
So you could hear every word, because there are a lot of stage announcements and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
So no problems in that regard. Mm-hmm. Just sitting there in the sun to begin with. It started about, 2 or 3 in the afternoon or something like
something
that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Now, Lorraine, you were there the whole time.
Yes.
But Madeline, you left early. How long did you stay?
I was there probably afternoon of the second day.
So it began on a Friday. We should point that out. It began on a Friday, then there was a Saturday, then the Sunday. In fact, it finished on the Monday morning because things were running so late. Mm-hmm. At what point did you think, you know what, I'm going to leave here because this is not what I wanted?
Well, I enjoyed it while I was there. And as I said, I met these people who were, everybody was gracious and nice and all that. And so they had what I later saw as a very makeshift tent. And I was in the tent, in quotes, inverted commas. And about 2-3 in the morning, it caved in with torrents of rain. And I didn't have a change of clothes or anything. And I was in my white phase. So I had come inexplicably wearing all white. I mean, that didn't matter. But I mean, nonetheless, you know, just bedraggled. But most of the way through the second day, I said, you know what? I've had enough. It's okay. I can see these people another time.
So it wasn't at that stage such a big event that you thought, you know, if I'm leaving now, I'm going to miss one of the most important things in history.
Yeah. No, because what happened after that was actually quite amazing to me. And that was along with the discomforts. And you could see people having bum trips. You could see people in not very good shape.
Yeah.
And again, for that size of crowd, the odds are that more disasters would happen, which they didn't. But there was a lot of discomfort. And what bothered me was I was right near the helipad where the helicopter was coming in. And you saw them bringing out crates of champagne and strawberries for the performers and beautiful meals and all that. And they were not bringing out enough people or bringing supplies to people that really needed basic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Food and water.
Yes. And it just wasn't forthcoming. And I have to say that bothered my sense of justice and all that stuff.
I know that did change later on. I think there were food drops made at some point. It was like a war zone, I suppose. But then you thought, you know what, I'm gone.
That's right. And so I just walked up to the helicopter. I got on. At some point, somebody said to me, who are you or who are you with? And I said, nobody. And I sat right by the door of the helicopter. and looked down. And as we pulled away, again, this image is just extraordinarily memorable because as far as you could see, it was just squirming with people. And I'd never seen an image like that. I'd never been on a helicopter before either. But that image is absolutely indelible. So pulling away slowly from the hill, and the entire hillside is just this carpet of bodies. That was quite memorable. Lorraine. And then the whole adventure of actually getting home.
Well, I'll get to that now. Yeah. Lorraine was one of those people on the hill. Madeline Savitt is our guest, and Lorraine Usner talking about Woodstock. Madeline, no one threw you off the helicopter. Who else was on it at the time?
It was just sort of roadies and groupies, people who would be going back to Liberty Airport, picking up things, supplies, whatever, and then back. I remember there was one young woman who looked about 12, and she was clearly a groupie. And I thought, well, she's way too young. I mean, and she was the one who said to me, "Who are you with?" You know, and I said, nobody.
You know? She thought you were a groupie as well.
She thought I had to be, one of them. Yeah.
So then the helicopter landed at the airport. Where did you go to from there?
At Liberty Airport, I just worked it out. You know, I had enough money. I think what I did was from the airport, took a bus back down to New York. From New York, I could take a train up to Westchester where I was living. And my parents saw me walking up the street and they could not believe their eyes because this was national news about how everything was paralyzed around the site. So they couldn't understand. They just could not get that I actually got myself out of there.
And you had the presence of mind just to get on the helicopter and stay on.
What can I've been a bourgeois my whole life. You know, not enough water, not enough food, you're wet, you're tired, you know.
You weren't a hippie.
No, actually, I really never was.
Lorraine, were you a hippie?
I guess I was a flower child, yes. I stayed to the end. There was no question.
Well, you had your rides with you, too.
Had a ride, yeah. Had a group of friends, but at the same time, I'm a diehard, I will stay to the bitter end, and I did.
But the end wasn't that bitter. Tell me about then maybe day two, day three, the people you saw. You mentioned The Who. They were fantastic.
Oh, they were great. Oh, they were unbelievable. I loved the band. They're one of my all-time favorites.
Right.
Country Joe and the Fish, and the incredible string band, who I still love.
Arlo
it's
Guthrie.
Very quirky. And
Cant Heat. Oh, they are fabulous. And Santana. Santana is one of the best live bands I have ever seen. They are unbelievable. They get everybody up and dancing. And Grateful Dead, Creedence Clearwater, Sly and the Family Stone.
These were all huge names at the time, and many of them still big names now.
Janis Joplin and The Who. And I had seen Janis a couple of times before as well, and a couple of times after that. And Johnny Winter. And, of course, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, they just blew everybody away.
Okay.
They were unbelievable.
Now, you stayed to the end, partly because, as you say, you wanted to get that ride home. But what people may not know is that Hendrix closed the show on Monday morning at about 8 o'clock in the morning through till about 10 o'clock.
That's right.
And there were only about 30,000 to 40,000 people left. Now, you look at it, it's still there's a lot of people, but that's a tenth of the people. So a lot of people must have gone home on the Sunday.
They had to trickle out of there. And it was amazing because when we left, it was easy to leave. So it cleared out. Yeah. It must have been a steady flow, but we didn't have any problems getting out.
Were there mostly teenagers there? I mean, Lorraine, at the age of 21, I got to say, you're probably one of the oldest people there.
I think there was a good group of people my age.
Yeah.
But, you know, the funny part about it is all the movies and all the magazines and photos that you see are all long-haired hippie types, but there were a lot of people that were not.
Yeah.
I'd say half of the people that were there were not long-haired hippies.
Well, there were nuns there and all sorts of things.
In habit, right?
Exactly.
Wet habit.
We also see a lot of the swimming, the skinny dipping. Now, I'm not going to ask you whether you did that, but, I mean, did you see plenty of that sort of activity as well?
I didn't go down to that area. I didn't know what was going on at the time. I did see some nude people walking around, but they were just having fun, you know. I hadn't seen that before in my life, so that was, you know, something different for me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there not
were all,
a lot,
all
but
sorts.
You know, they were around.
The age spread. Listen, I feel that the movie was made partly to recoup some of the losses, which it was, and so in that was kind of born the myth. I mean, yes, it was an extraordinary event. It really was. But the myth was really made with that selective editing of the images and everything. I mean, there were plenty of people in New York who were working people. There was a pretty big age spread, I think. You know, people into their 30s, probably.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And not everybody was sort of expecting it to be this sort of gigantic bath, you know.
But I think a lot of people left there very changed if they didn't go there with a certain mindset, they may have left with a different mindset.
Okay, Madeline, you were a bourgeois 16-year-old. Did you change? Did you become a hippie or a flower person, flower child after that?
No. In fact, after that, not too long after that, I moved to San Francisco, and I had my own apartment, and I was 18 at the time, and I watched it all. I mean, it was the tail end of the, you know, peace and love thing, mm-hmm. and actually I have to say at the tail end of that whole time, it became fairly ugly. So while I was the one who was working and had the apartment, and I had various people coming in and out and visiting who were more hippie-like than me, I think it was really sort of not appreciating the hypocrisy of the time, which it was in many respects. There was a lot of talk of something, but then a lot of exploitive action. Does that make sense?
I know what you're saying. Lorraine, were you changed? How were you changed by it? I noticed you're still wearing your peace symbol around your neck now.
I've been waiting all these years for this to come back in style. I think that I was there because that's where I was meant to be. And I don't think I changed after that. I think I was pretty much the same person that I was. Mm.
Did you go to a lot more rock festivals?
Yes, I did. I went to two more that year. So 1969 was pretty full. When I got back to Florida, there was a pop festival in November of 69, which was a three-day festival as well. Had people like Janis Joplin, Edgar Winner, and the Rolling Stones were there, among a lot of others, you know. And then in December, there was another one in Miami. So I went to that one, and I saw Santana and Canned Heat and a lot of big names there as well. And
were they more organized than Woodstock or better organized than Woodstock?
There was probably more facilities, yeah, but they were still in the very crude manner. You know, they weren't real polished with what they were doing.
I think after Woodstock there was more of a plan to try to duplicate it. And so you have things like Altamont that happened in California after that. Mm. And they wanted it to have that same thing, but I don't think you can duplicate spontaneity like
exactly.
that. And
Yeah, I think 1969 was just a magical time. It's just it was a coming together of something that was bigger than we could have imagined. And I think that maybe after that they tried to duplicate what happened, but I don't know if it ever really was duplicated.
Yeah.
I see it in hindsight as the critical mass of a demographic. And we were very much the boomers. And we were carrying the, you know, the economy with us and all this stuff. Having said that, it was a breaking free from a lot of the strictures that had been, you know, social mores before. And it was very freeing. But, you know, I always felt that being peace and love is much harder. And carrying it through your life is very hard. It's a lot harder than just sort of going like this, growing your hair long. And I felt that then, intuitively. Mm. I felt there was a lot of, like, not good behavior masquerading as that.
But one of the things I read about Woodstock is that it was a very peaceful, loving place. The other concerts or the other things in the era were not. But 500,000 people on that hillside, that was an expression of peace and love, that there were no fights or riots or anything like that which have marred other rock festivals, that Woodstock seemed to be carried off without a hitch.
Yeah, it was. I think there was a really strong community feeling. We're all here together. We're all experiencing these discomforts together, definitely.
People talk about the rain at Woodstock. Lorraine, what do you remember?
Oh, wow, that was really incredible. I mean, once it started, it bucketed. It just didn't stop. It just kept coming and coming and coming. And by the end of the first day of rain, that beautiful hill of alfalfa grass was a hill of mud, and everybody was just embedded in that mud and just sleeping bags, blankets, whatever you had was just stuck in that mud. It was not pretty. It was very, very discomforting.
If you were not inclined to take any substance, you were after you got soaked and full of mud and exhausted and everything, you know.
How bad were the drugs there?
I think there were a lot, but I don't think it was bad. I'd seen people who were acting a bit frantic and stuff like that, but I don't think it became a problem.
I never saw a lot. I'm sure that was all around. It was there, but nobody tried to give you any or make you take anything or force anything on anybody. I didn't see any of that at all.
And for the record, since my kids are probably going to hear this, I took nothing, absolutely nothing. But no, there was marijuana everywhere. And, you know, it was there for the asking. But I don't think that, you know, it wasn't people shooting up. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, there was acid there, I'm sure. But you didn't see people freaking out and everything. Okay. It was not a, yeah.
Lorraine, when Madeline left, she just went back to a family home. She was only 16. When you left Woodstock, what did you do?
Well, we decided that we would go into Greenwich Village because we figured since we were in that part of the world, we might as well go to a really cool place. So we drove into New York City and went to Washington Square Park and went into the park. And we thought there would be like really a lot of people there left over from Woodstock, but actually there weren't. There were just little handfuls and pockets of people around. I guess everyone decided that they had enough and went home. But because we had traveled for so far, we did go into New York City and just stayed there for an afternoon, I think. And then my friends were going back to Florida, and I had them drop me off in New Jersey at a relative's house, and I spent a little time there. They thought it was totally nuts coming out of Woodstock. I had clay mud in my toenails and for 6 months.
I think amazingly, you got a parking spot at Woodstock and then in New York City.
That's true.
That's right.
I'm glad there's such happy memories of what was obviously a fantastic time in rock and roll, but also in your own lives. Madeline Savitt and Lorraine Usner, thank you so much for coming in.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That's Lorraine Usner and Madeline Savitt talking about their experiences at Woodstock over those 3 days of peace, love and music in August 1969.
And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.